Welcome to North State Give and Take. I'm Bobby Tryon, and you're listening to 90.1 FM KZFR Chico. All right, today on North State Give and Take, I'm going to interview Christina Schierenbeck. And Christina is a person who knows a lot about native plants, which I'd like to know more about. So I jokingly am going to say, tell me all you know about native plants, but that would probably take a really long time. But tell me, you know, how you got into that. What have you been doing up until this point? And then we'll, you know, talk about some specific plants maybe.
Thank you, Bobby. Thanks for having me. I have been interested in native plants for, I guess, about 45 years now. And when I was first an undergraduate at Chico State back in the 70s, I joined the California Native Plant Society in about 1980, and that really widened my view, plus the botany courses I took both at Chico and Humboldt State from some really passionate botanists, the importance of plants to our entire ecosystem. And I recently retired as a professor of botany from Chico State after 28 years.
I know you're going to go into that a little bit more, but a funny question I had was, what is a native plant?
Okay, yeah, that's a great question. A native plant is something that evolved where it is found. And I think what most people don't realize is that evolution takes a very long time. So here in Chico, for example, most of the plant species we see, depending on their evolutionary history, could have been here for millions of years or just a few million years. But certainly the things that we consider non-native would have been introduced within the past few hundred years, or certainly anything after the Spanish explorers.
Are they mostly drought resistant?
Certainly the plants that would have evolved in our region would have been able to tolerate, again, over millions of years, a wide fluctuation of both wet years and dry years. And that is what makes them so resilient in the face of the drought that we're having right now. I must confess, when it's super dry, I do give my plants a little supplemental water, but for the most part, after the first couple of years, no watering is required.
Mm-hmm. And your yard is really a beautiful place for seeing that. I know that. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Try to have a mix of things at all different stratifications. So meaning that I have the grassland level and the wildflower level, and then a shrub layer, and then small trees, and then large trees. And that way it attracts an abundance of different bird species. And by having a lot of different native plant species, I also get a lot of native insect species, which the birds feed on, and so on.
Yeah, and I've seen it in your yard. It's sort of different than most yards you'll see. It almost looks like a hodgepodge, would you say?
Yeah, I go, different people have different ideas. It is a hodgepodge. I try to let the plants sort it out on their own. So I put the native plants out there and remove the non-natives. And like I said, let the natives sort it out. So it's more of a wildland approach rather than a manicured landscaped approach.
Sure.
But there, you can use native plants for very formal landscapes also. Even if you have an HOA that requires a certain amount of lawn, you can use native plants for your showy shrubs, anything to increase native plant habitat for insects and birds.
And if you would go somewhere to a nursery, it's specific. They'll show you these are native plants, so it's easy to tell. Which ones would...
The Floral Native Nursery out on Meridian is really the best choice in town for native plants. And they have plants for all kinds of different habitat, whether you need sun or shade, and whether you want something large or small. Just ask them. And they also have seeds available. Mm-hmm. This is probably not the right time of year to seed native plants. That's the fall. but certainly I recommend going out there. And there's also an upcoming native plant garden tour hosted by California Native Plant Society.
Oh, do you know when that is?
I think it's May 1st, but go to cnps.org, Mount Lassen chapter, and you should find more information about it. CNPS?
CNPS. Okay. For more information. Yeah. Now, do you keep your eyes out in your garden because different things will start growing that have, you know, the wind has brought in a seed or two and you have to kind of keep an eye on things?
Yes. Unfortunately, most of those things are the non-natives. So I noticed the street sweepers come by, and if I have a neighbor who is not maintaining their lawn and there's a lot of non-native grass seed, those get swept right into my yard. So it's a constant battle. We've been doing it for a number of years now, but every year we have to remove non-native species.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I imagine that's everywhere.
Yes,
it's just that so many things have taken over, and as you don't know what's a native plant and what isn't.
Right. Yeah, that's another good reason to visit a native plant nursery or just educate oneself about what's native to our region and what's not.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Oh, and so cultivating them, are they a little easier to cultivate? I mean, I'm sure we all feed plants and all take care of them, so, but they must grow a little easier.
Well, it depends. You can grow a native plant species in pots, but the trick to growing them in pots is to use native soil. They don't take well to the kind of soil that you would pick up at a big box store. They really like a native soil. So in cultivation is easy if you know when to plant. And so I really wouldn't plant any native plant past December. Kind of the window is October through December, maybe January, but they really need to establish their root systems through the winter. And then the first couple of years for perennials will require a little supplemental water, but after the first couple of years, you shouldn't have to water at all.
Huh. Okay. Because that's what I think people are looking for. I certainly am in my backyard. I ought to have you come over and help me look at that.
Sure. You have some great habitat over there in your neighborhood.
We do.
Some big trees. Yeah.
We do. Well, and we did a big job in the backyard and got rid of a lot of things. And I'm looking at it going, well, what am I going to put in here? And that is clearly drought tolerant. That's such an important thing right now. I mean, obviously.
Right.
Yeah. And certainly not lawn.
Yeah, right. Lawn, I think it's a cultural phenomenon that came when the colonists came to the East Coast because of the English or European tradition, and that came west as people moved west. But in our climate, lawns just don't make sense. No. For a lot of reasons. One, they take excess water, they don't host any biological diversity, and they require chemicals in terms of pesticides and fertilizers, which in themselves take energy in the form of carbon to produce. So lawns are just bad news all the way around.
Right. Give me an example. Let's do a little bit of some ideas that you know. So you were talking about you have the grass, then you get up a little higher, and then you'll have a shrub. Mm-hmm. What are some of the ones, let's look at the grass parts first, something that's sort of low to the ground.
Well, a lot of the native bulbs are really nice. The bulbs, you can buy seed or bulbs for those. Things like the blue, used to be called blue dicks, it's now blue dips. They're pretty plentiful in the park right now. They have the long scape, it's called, or stem, with the little bunch of blue flowers at the end. And there's a yellow version of that called a pretty face, which is another one. One that's really easy to grow that I've been planting on my front strip is the ambiguous mallow, Sedalcia ambigua. And it's very drought tolerant, very showy, with peach colored flowers. Lupins are really great for the low growing, both perennial lupins, which tend to be a little bigger, versus the annual lupins, which tend to be smaller. Clarkia, the genus Clarkia, or Farewell to Spring, gives showy pink flowers. Those are just some examples. Lots of things like baby blue eyes, five spot, again, depending on your site. Those last two like it a little more moist.
Mm-hmm. And Ready? Sun, I'm sure that those things you have to take into account.
Yeah.
Shade or sunny.
Just yeah. like anything you buy at the big box store, you need to give it the right sight for the right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so those are sort of low. They would be a foot tall or 2 feet tall. Yeah, okay.
Uh-huh. Okay, so the things that are about 2 feet tall, I think a popular one that's really easy to grow is the California fuchsia. And the bonus to that plant is that it flowers in the late summer and fall with really pretty tubular red flowers. And hummingbirds love red flowers. So if you like hummingbirds, that's a plant that you should get. Also the silver bush lupin, which is a perennial lupin, gets a little bigger, has nice showy blue flowers. And depending, let's see, I'm trying to think. Milkweed is another one that's really nice and showy.
So we've been talking about the sort of the next level up. So we're talking about 2 feet, 2 or 3 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Great. Some of the manzanitas, like the Arctostaphylos densiflora, or if you go to the nursery, you would ask for the Howard McMinn manzanita. Another one that's pretty easy to grow. It can be trimmed nicely to a couple feet, or it can get very large. I noticed Sierra Nevada actually has a lot of those planted around the outer parking lot, which brings up another point. People don't realize that you don't have to, as you call my yard, wild. You don't have to have a wild look. You can have a very tame, unlandscaped look by using native plants. And they're very prunable, just like most things. So yeah. It doesn't have to be wild looking.
Oh, the more I talk to you, the more I want you to come over here.
Happy to
help me. And how are they all take a while to get them growing? You know, I like a plant who kind of a year or two, I can go, wow, that grew. Whereas some things are so slow. I don't know if native plants are kind of
Plants are a little on the slow side. It does take them a couple years to get going. I'm thinking about my red bud, which is another one that's kind of a medium-sized shrub. It can be trimmed into a small tree, or it can be trimmed into a small shrub or a medium shrub. And it's a beauty. It's the one, it's in flower all around town now and in the foothills, kind of a deep color, and it flowers before it leaves out. It takes a couple years before it puts on a show for you.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth it in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Well, I find that any planting, I have a lot of planting I've done and then it didn't work out. So in 2 years' time, I sometimes don't have anything anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so I've got the time.
I think what's important to keep in mind is, why do places like Lowe's and Home Depot sell the plants that they plant? That they sell. They sell them because they're hard to kill and they grow fast and they produce lots of flowers, which also translates usually into invasiveness. So they don't want to sell you a plant that's going to likely die. So they sell low risk plants, and low risk plants are the ones that tend to be problematic. I'm not saying that across the board, but they tend to be problematic. And the big downside of most of those plants that are horticultural specimens that often come from Asia or Europe, they've been bred and they have little to no ecological value. And so because we've lost so much biodiversity due to the human population, I think it's essential that we provide some biodiversity. And that is one aspect of climate change that really doesn't get talked about enough, I don't think, is the loss of biodiversity. It's very foundational to the existence of all terrestrial organisms.
You've been listening to an interview with Christina Scherenbeck. She was a botany professor at Chico State. She's retired now, and we're talking about native plants. And you're listening to 90.1 FM KZFR Chico. I'm Bobby Tryon, and this is North State Give and Take. And we'll be back in a bit. To our conversation with Christina Scherenbeck, talking about native plants, and she's talking now about biodiversity. Define biodiversity.
Biodiversity would be just the number and abundance of different kinds of species, and that would include broadly plants, insects, animals, or well, insects are animals, of course, so invertebrate, invertebrate animals, nematodes, you name it, anything, bacteria, anything living is biodiversity. And plants, of course, convert energy from the sun into usable energy for organisms, and we either eat the plants directly to get that energy, or something else eats the organism to get that. So all terrestrial energy on the planet comes from plants, and they have evolved in situ for millions of years.
Yes, and I do appreciate you kind of pointing out that when you go to the big box stores, there's the big flowers, and they grow fast. Those are two things that I'm sure that people want. And without that really adding to the biodiversity, that's a really big reason to be careful of that.
Yes, I believe so, yeah. And you'll notice when you start bringing home native plants, you'll start to notice the variety of insects that are attracted. It's really quite wonderful to sit and watch the different pollinators.
It will come.
Plants, yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, I'm looking forward to that. I want to do that. Do you care if people know where you live?
No, I don't. That's fine.
Okay. So we might just say you might want to drive by in the corner and take a peek over at your house.
And I'm happy to share where I live, which is the corner of 3rd Avenue and Oleander. And it, as you described, looks kind of wild. It's just now starting to come into flower. So the next month or two will be actually pretty nice with lots of color of native species. And you're more than welcome to collect seed from any of the plants that I have, because I strongly encourage other people to grow native plants. So any plant you want and you want seed, just go ahead and take it.
Wow, now that is a great offer. So it's on the corner of Oleander and 3rd, and it's on the northeast corner.
Yes.
And it's quite obvious. The yard is quite obvious. So
we have raised boxes for food also.
Yeah. So you can drive by for and see it, which is cool, especially as they do different things. And then to be able to stop and pick up some seeds. Now that's a way to get those native plants out there.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I've noticed them kind of gradually spreading around the neighborhood. Like you said, that some of them end up in other people's yards. And our mutual friend Robin has now has the native plant bug, and I couldn't be more thrilled.
Yeah. She's her little red bud.
She's got a red bud, and she's growing a bunch of lupins, and it's just great.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Well, she's the one that kind of said, hey, you ought to interview Christina.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, because she... Yeah. Well, just because all of us are sort of, not all of us, but certainly some of us are talking about this very thing for all of those reasons that you've spoken, the biodiversity, the drought tolerant, you know, what can we do, these little things that we can do, you know, just to make a difference.
I think one thing that we can do, and I've served on various committees and gone to meetings with the city of Chico and also for Chico State campus. And we've recently developed a vegetation plan for the future for Chico State, which includes certainly the inclusion of many more natives on campus than before. And some Sandrine Matisic in geology has also incorporated some bioswales, which are really good for returning water to the groundwater. And so we're trying to, and then we have the native creek that runs through campus, so we're trying to keep the invasives out of the creek while also retaining, because this is important, the value of the arboretum for specimen trees for teaching. So we do have, we'll continue to have things from all over the world while still increasing the percentage of native plant species. So you may have noticed that on campus in recent years as there's more and more native plant species. Mm-hmm. And the city of Chico has been a little harder to convince about the importance of native plants. They're making inroads, however. And so if you are interested in this issue, I think it's really important to encourage, as they're developing a new urban forest plan, to encourage the use of natives. We call ourselves the City of Trees, right? And when I think of trees for Chico, I don't think of little trees like crepe myrtle, which are non-native, but pretty. I think of the oaks. Now, oaks are only allowed in certain areas because in the walnuts that Bidwell planted, because they're considered a liability. They also require a large planting box. And so in new developments, developers need to be encouraged, they're not currently required to do this, to create larger planter boxes. So in the old part of town where I live, our planter boxes are 8 to 10 feet wide. So it's large enough to handle a large tree. And your neighborhood in the Barber is like that. You have many large mature trees, and that's what makes those neighborhoods charming. Mm-hmm. But because of liability issues, the city's being encouraged more and more to plant small trees. I don't think Chico wants to be known as the city of small trees.
No.
So I think in certain areas like downtown, maybe really big trees aren't appropriate because of pedestrian traffic. But in other areas, we really need to think long and hard about what we want our city to look like in 20 or 30 years. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, and a lot of the development that's happening in Chico now is happening up on the lava cap out towards 32. And yes. Big trees aren't going to grow there because the soil is so poor. But look around and what does grow on those lands? Blue oaks, which can handle that poor soil. Buckbrush, the Ceanothus cuneatus, which can be showy. And neither of those trees require any water. And certainly there's a lot of native herbs that can grow on that lava cap. So instead of, as much as I love this tree, ginkgos don't do well in that situation. And ginkgos, as gorgeous as they are, don't provide any ecological value. So they're stunning, especially down the Esplanade in the fall. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, and then down here we have a lot of pistachio, the ornamental pistachio. The city planted them.
Yeah, the city, I think we did convince them, I could be wrong about this, to ban the Chinese pistache. There's a couple problems with that. Chinese pistache is something we call dioecious, which means it has male and female plants.
Yes.
So the argument is if you plant only male plants, then you don't have the problem. Well, male plants produce pollen. Female plants, which we do have from very many historical plantings, produce the berries. And the berries have been known to spread by birds, and they are invasive in the park. So now Chinese pistache is replacing a lot of the native trees in the park, which in itself is a problem. Again, Chinese pistache is stunning in the fall. It's just beautiful.
Yes.
But ecological value, no.
Yep, boy, and we've got a lot of it here. Mm-hmm. So just one more thing. Give me an example of a real invasive plant that we have here, that especially the park is probably where it would be.
Yellow star thistle.
Uh-huh.
Yellow star thistle is horrible and very hard to manage. We're getting a handle on it. Fire helps, but it has to be very, very persistent, and one cannot let it go to seed. Mm-hmm. So grazing can be an important tool done at exactly the right time. Fire with grazing can be important tools. Another horribly invasive plant that we have very commonly around town is the tree of heaven.
And oh, yes.
It's terrible. It produces so many seeds and it grows so fast. And it's super invasive. And again, it's invading the park. So that's a problem.
Do they call that a lanthus? Is that what that is?
Ailanthus altissima, yes.
Yeah. Yes, bad one. Well, gosh, I learned a lot, and I thank you, Christina. Really,
thank you, Bobby.
That was really good. I mean, so many things for me to think about, and I'm going to talk to you about coming over to my yard.
I will.
Of course, like you said, not a good time to plant them, but I'll wait.
That's right, and you can stock up a bunch of plants that are already potted, and start planning out your planting program for the fall.
Yeah, and start them now in a pot.
Well, or you just purchase them in a pot at Floral Native, and then you know, plan where you're going to plant them once the rains, should they ever come again,
okay.
in the fall.
Good idea. Thank you, Christina Scherenbeck, for talking to me about native plants. It's so nice that our community has somebody who just is keeping an eye out. And
yeah, thank you so much, Bobby. And there are a lot of other people around town. And again, California Native Plant Society is your best resource for general information about, they have all kinds of tools for garden planning and plant lists by region. And it's a great source.
You've been listening to a conversation with Christina Scherenbeck talking about native plants and biodiversity. If you missed any of it, or you'd like to hear more of it again, or tell a friend, you can go to kzfr.org. You can go to programs, go to Tuesday, in this case, at Down to North State Give and Take, and all of my conversations are there, and her conversation will be there. That's true for all the shows on KZFR. If you go to programs and to the day that the show is and find the show, you can find some archives there. The music archives are only up for 2 weeks, but any of the public affairs programming, they remain up. So you can look at every conversation that I've had. If you know anyone that would like to be on North State Give and Take and talk about what they're doing, please call me, 530-520-1593. If you have a neat event or just something of interest, give me a call. We can do an interview. It's a Zoom interview, so it's pretty easy. All right, thanks for listening. North State Give and Take on KZFR 90.1 FM. My name's Bobby Tryon, and Ginger is up next with Radioactive.